Welcome to Radio.
Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, a spiritual relationship expert helping men and women heal their bodies, their relationships, and their lives through love. And I'm author of the book, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, available at lulu.com. Today I will be speaking with Sherry Palm about a health problem which is actually becoming a global women's health pandemic, with millions of women around the world suffering, often in silence. We are not talking about sexual dysfunctions, and we're not talking about sexually transmitted diseases. Today we will be discussing a problem that you may have never heard about before, but this problem does affect many women. Sherry Palm is the founder and president of APOPS, the Association for Pelvic Organ Prolapse Support, Incorporated, a nonprofit foundation for pelvic organ prolapse support. Sherry is also an award-winning author of the book by the same name, Pelvic Organ Prolapse, The Silent Epidemic, and she is the community leader of the MedHelp.org Urogynecology Forum. So now I would like to welcome Sherry Palm. Sherry, hi.
Hi, hon. Thanks so much for inviting me on your show today. I want you to know I really appreciate the chance to share information about POP with others, both men and women.
It sounds like a really important topic to be sharing with people because they probably have no idea what it is.
Exactly.
So before you even explain your background, your training, and what led you to study this important health issue, I want to explain to you and to our listeners that I have been a practicing psychotherapist specializing in human sexuality issues, and I have rarely, if ever, heard any of my clients or colleagues talk about pelvic organ prolapse. So I would really like you to explain exactly what this is.
Yes, Erica, and that's a big part of the problem that we're dealing with, is that no one knows about this, no one talks about this, this is stuffed in the closet. Pelvic organ prolapse is a condition that occurs when the PC, or pelvic floor muscle, which is a muscle that sits at the base of your pelvic cavity, somewhat like a trampoline, it creates the support for the organs inside your pelvic cavity, like the bladder, the uterus, the vagina, the colon or rectum, and the intestines. And what happens with POP is there's a variety of reasons that that muscle gets damaged or becomes weakened, and it can no longer do its job of supporting those organs, and they'll start to shift downward in the pelvic cavity toward and into the vagina. And sometimes they push all the way through the vagina so that they're bulging outside of the woman's body. Worst case scenario,
wow,
is a woman can have her uterus completely outside of her body.
I have never heard of that.
I know. No one's talking about it. I don't want to make this dry, but just a few statistics to pound home how common this is. In the U.S. alone, and again, like you said in your intro, this is a global women's health pandemic. Every country in the world, there are women that have got this health issue. In the U.S. alone, there are 28 million women who have pelvic floor disorders, and most of those women have got pelvic organ prolapse. It's
20
one of those
million?
28
wow.
million. Yes.
28 million, wow.
28 million, yes. It's a huge health pandemic. Part of the reason it's so common is there's no screening in place for this health issue. The two most common causes are vaginal childbirth and menopause. And so the fact that there is no screening in place is, to me, it's a huge red flag. The symptoms tied to this, and I can get into more details about those specifics in a little bit. Because the symptoms
All right.
are so embarrassing, women won't talk about it. They keep it in the closet. It isn't discussed.
So before explaining more details about POP, I'd like you to share your background, your training, and what led you to focus on and study this particular female health issue.
Okay, my background, I've been doing health research for over 25 years, and that began when I was given an extremely negative diagnosis of MS back in 1983. I was I was a mess back then, and I was pretty much told I was going to end up in a wheelchair in a very short time frame, and I did not find that acceptable. So I started doing my own research to find answers for myself, and was able to get myself balanced by learning some alternative ways to heal my body, how to deal with stresses and those kinds of things, as well as the physical stuff. So that kind of zigzagged my path. My backdrop before that was in bookkeeping, but the change in my health made me shift my focal point. So despite having been doing research for 25-plus years, despite the fact that my best friend is my healthcare practitioner and we discuss medical issues all the time, if we're having a 2 to 3 hour power lunch, it's pretty much all health talk. We talk about the families and kids and so on for maybe 15 minutes to a half an hour. And then we go on to health, and that's what we talk about. And despite that, I had never heard of this. I was diagnosed with this. I had discovered that I had tissues bulging out of my vagina, and I didn't know what that meant. I would notice when I was wiping myself that there was something squishy down there. So I actually took out a handheld mirror and looked and saw this big lump of soft tissue, and it looks like a you think cyst right away or tumor or something when you see a lump like that on your body that you're not familiar with. And I didn't panic right away because it wasn't painful, and I'd never heard of vaginal cancer before, so I wasn't really, you know, hugely concerned about it, but I knew it had to be addressed. So I contacted my buddy, and she said, come on in, and we'll do a pelvic exam. And she did the exam, and she said, point blank, you have pelvic organ prolapse. And my reaction to that was, I have what? I had no idea what she was talking about. It was, you know, I was clueless. And so she went on and described somewhat in basic terms what pelvic organ prolapse is, and she recommended that I would try a pessary. Again, my reaction was, try a what? I didn't know what that was. And the pessary,
what is that?
It's actually a diaphragm-type device that you insert vaginally, which takes the place of the PC muscle or pelvic floor muscle to support those organs inside of you.
Can you say what that is again?
Pessary, P-E-S-S-A-R-Y. It's like a, it comes in many different shapes and sizes, but it's basically a diaphragm-type device that you insert vaginally, and that will replace the pelvic floor muscle purpose. It creates support for your organs inside of you. Had never heard of it, had no idea what it was, and so I left that appointment, came home from that appointment, and did what I do naturally, and that started researching. And everything I read kept saying, I mean, I found plenty of stuff accessible online, but everything said the same thing over and over, besides all the backdrop of explaining pelvic organ prolapse, the five different types, the symptoms, and so on. The thing that kept pounding me in the face was I kept reading how common it is. Everything I read was throwing statistics at me about how common this condition was, and I just kept my socks off. I couldn't believe it. If it's so common, and I've been doing health research for so long, how was it possible that I had never heard of this before? And so
amazing to me that common. I thought you were going to say, you know, it's just a rare disease or common in some developing countries or something.
Yeah, no. It's all over the place. You know, it's so common. So I initially went from, okay, well, whatever this is, I'll have to, you know, just address it. And then as I read the research behind it, I got mad. I thought, this is ridiculous. How is it possible that there are so many women that are suffering with this and I've never heard of it? That's insane. So I knew within a couple of weeks after my diagnosis and doing my preliminary research, I had to write a book. I just knew that all women need to know this information. The more I read, the more I found out, I thought, I've got to bang the drum on this one. I've never had any interest in writing prior to that. I certainly never had any interest in speaking publicly prior to that, but I just felt that this is ridiculous. How is it possible that this slipped through the cracks somehow? It's just so kept behind closed doors. We all need to know about this so we can recognize the signs and symptoms and get treated for it. So that kind of set my path in place, and I tried the pessary, and the pessary worked well for me. it's important to have the right type of pessary, the right size of pessary, and so that comes down to whoever's doing the fitting for you, whichever physician's fitting you for a pessary. And I was lucky, mine fit well and worked well, but my life is like most women, is so full of everything, and I'm on the go. I work a lot of hours. I have a very, very active life, and, you know, you get up in the morning, and you're doing all your chick stuff, you know, you're showering, you're exercising, you're putting makeup on, you're dressing, you're taking care of the household stuff, you're taking your dogs out to poop, whatever, and I'm putting my contacts one morning, and I thought, oh, yes, and you have to put the pessary in, too, because you, the one I had, the type I had, you insert it in the morning, and you wear it throughout the day for support, and you remove it in the evening, and then you know, wash it up and it's set for the next day. So it was one more thing to do.
Right.
And I didn't need one more thing to do. So I opted, because there are both surgical and non-surgical treatments for this, I opted relatively early in to seek urogynecologic consults for surgery for this. And my doctor friend gave me the name of a really good urogynecologist in my area here. And so I went and got my questions answered, and I ended up having surgery in February. I was diagnosed in December, and I had surgery in February for three types of
surgery. That's pretty soon.
It was. But I had read so much stuff, I knew it was the right path for me. So I did my homework, and I was very comfortable with my decision. And
I have the sense, just listening to you, that many women just quietly go and get the surgery, and nobody ever knows about it.
And that's very true. The women that... The classic pathway is women have these symptoms. They don't know what they mean. They may go to their doctor, their PCP, or their gynecologist, and they may complain about some symptoms. Sometimes the physicians will say, this is what it is. It's pelvic organ prolapse. Sometimes they don't. Some physicians will tell the patient.
And sometimes they don't know.
Exactly. Some women go through upper lower GI testing because a lot of these symptoms, they roll to other conditions like IBS and other female health issues. And so the diagnosis gets missed.
IBS, just for people who might know, irritable bowel syndrome.
Thank you. Yes. And so the doctors sometimes will say to women, well, if they know what it is, they'll say, well, that's what comes from having babies. Or if a woman is, say, in her menopausal years, they'll say, well, that's what comes when you get older. That's just what happens. And those obviously are not acceptable.
I want to ask some questions here. What are some of the causes of POB? Could it be caused by an infection or a trauma, or could it be a genetic defect? I mean, they're just saying it comes with menopause, maybe just because the hormones shift, or with childbirth.
Right. But there are actually many causes, and typically women will have more than one cause, one causal factor. My own body, I counted 4 to 5 flags for sure. The most common cause is vaginal childbirth, and that's because there is so much structural damage done during the childbirthing process that you often don't recognize what's, you know, damage has occurred until X number of years down the road. Every vaginal childbirth that you have increases a woman's risk factor for POP.
Wow.
Second most common cause is menopause, and that is, like you mentioned, directly related to that hormonal decrease. Your estrogen, women don't often recognize that estrogen has a huge impact to your muscle tissue strength and integrity. And that's all your muscles, inside and outside. So as those estrogen levels drop, that PC muscle that sits at the base of the pelvic cavity that's supporting everything does get weaker, just like the outside muscles get weaker. Heavy lifting is an issue, and people tend to think of heavy lifting along the lines of job-related or a few women who are like weight trainers, that kind of thing. But when we stop and think about heavy lifting, think about what you do with your children for years and years and years on end, over and over and over. We're picking up our kids, and no one is telling us to contract that PC muscle. And for women that don't know what that PC muscle contraction is like, that is the muscle you contract when you stop the flow of pee, that tightening you feel when you stop that flow of pee, that is your PC muscle, and that's a Kegel contraction. So someone
well,
can
in sex therapy, we work with that a lot, that
sure,
a woman who has low desire or vaginismus or some other problem. But
right,
I'm thinking
right.
In terms of my awareness of the body and body therapy, that when you're lifting, what's really important is to bend your knees and use your thighs and your stomach muscles rather than having your knees straight. I'm picturing a mother picking up a child and moving around with straight knees and straining the lower back, not contracting the abdominal muscles and not using the PC.
Right, exactly. And when anytime you go to, well, gee, any store you go to, you will see women holding their babies on their hips or their children on their hips. And I can guarantee you that probably 98% of the time, if not more, those women are not contracting their abdominal core muscles. They're not contracting that PC muscle. So that weight is displaced, and it's pushing stuff down. So that's an issue that should be addressed, that there should be some recognition about that. Women that are marathon runners, joggers, that do aggressive aerobics, that do not have internal support, you are repetitively, and I'm not against exercise. I'm actually an exercise fanatic myself. But
right.
We need to let women know that they need to have, especially marathon runners, internal support when they're running to create a structure to keep those organs from pounding downward. There's women
what comes to mind is Pilates. What a powerful exercise for a person to combine with their running.
Yes,
because that
Pilates
works the core muscles.
A wonderful, wonderful base for helping you help yourself to prevent and or treat POP issues. Women that have chronic constipation or chronic coughing, what is happening there is the repetitive jerking down of those organs and tissues. DRA is a condition where women...
What is that?
DRA, diastasis rectus abdominis. When women get pregnant, that long abdominal muscle in the front, it'll split in the center as the weight of the baby pushes against it and the size of the baby pushes against it. And often that split will come back together after the baby is born, but sometimes it does not. So that creates a weakness in that core support structure. There is a possibly...
So I'm hearing you speak so much about childbirth that's another whole area to educate women about.
Yes.
After childbirth, what to do for their body to bring it back to strength.
Yes, exactly. There's just so much basic information that's being missed when women are going into those pregnancy months that they really should have. There's the potential for a genetic factor here. If you have a mother and or a sister that's had bladder sling done for urinary leakage, you might want to brain pick her a little bit further because it's possible that she's had more than a bladder sling done. Some women, you know, have the saying that some women are just made for having babies. There are women that never have POP issues, but the flip side is there are women that do. And so if someone in your family has danced down this pathway, it might be a good idea to just question them a little bit about what exactly they've had done repair-wise. Hysterectomy is a factor. And again, I'm not against hysterectomies. I had one myself at 40, and it was the best 40th birthday present I could have given myself. I really felt better afterwards.
But why is that a factor?
A third of the time, nearly a third of the time, when women have a hysterectomy, they will end up with vaginal vault prolapse. There's five types of POP, and vaginal vault prolapse is one of them. And what happens is when they remove the uterus, if things aren't repaired in exactly the right way, the top of the vagina caves in on itself.
Oh.
So it's important that you seek the right physician to do your hysterectomy. I was fortunate that mine was done properly. I didn't have any problems with that. That was not one of the three types I had, but that is a huge, a third is a lot of women, so that a lot of women have hysterectomy, so this is important information that does not get discussed. I can remember asking my gynecologist prior to my hysterectomy, what stops stuff from falling out? I don't know what maybe asked that question, but I did, and her reply was, we just tack things up properly, you don't have to worry about it. Now, I'm fortunate. She did tack things up properly, and I had no problem with the vaginal vault issue. However, that would have been a great opportunity for her to discuss pelvic organ prolapse with me, mention it, talk about it, start a dialogue about it, and make me aware that there was such a thing so that I'd be watching for signs and symptoms down the road.
Well, a lot of medical doctors are so busy, and they don't realize that the patient has no idea and needs that information. So you're providing a huge service for people. So I have a question. If a woman discovers that she has POP, P-O-P, or if she just sees something strange in the vaginal area that doesn't feel right, what do you recommend that she does?
Well, there's one really good source for women to start with. On the website I have for my nonprofit, the Association for Pelvic Organ Prolapse, actually the website name is pelvicorganprolapsesupport.org. On that website, there's a lot of information about POP, but there's also a POP risk factor questionnaire that women can download, and there's a series of questions on that sheet that women
can
go through and answer, and if they have several checked off, take that sheet right with you to your doctor, to your PCP, to your gynecologist, because those are the physicians that should be screening for this. And take that paper in with you and say, I'm a little concerned here. I printed this thing off and I answered these questions, and I have got several markers for pelvic organ prolapse. Could you please check me for it or, you know, tell me what to do? And that will initiate the dialogue. That will get the wheels turning. For women, I think the most important thing is to know what the symptoms are. And I really think I should go through those, because there are so many that women have that they just have no idea that it has a significance, that there's something else going on. I mentioned that the symptom that caught my attention was I actually literally felt tissues bulging out of my vagina, and that's very common. However, the most common symptom is urinary incontinence. We all know about urinary incontinence as women. It's kind of like,
well, that's,
you know,
another one of these embarrassing issues that you don't want to
right,
talk
about. Right, right. It's, I mean, we've all seen that great wall of incontinence products at the stores, and it's one of those issues that we think along the lines of, well, as you age that happens, or as you have babies that happens, but women often don't recognize that urinary incontinence does not stand alone. It is a symptom of something else. It is always a symptom of something else. It's a symptom, pure and simple. So if you have urinary incontinence, whether or not you have POP, it needs to be addressed, because it's going to get worse in most cases. So that's the second most common symptom, but there's also urine retention, and that's what I had. I couldn't get the pee to come out. I would wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'd have to go to the bathroom, and I'd sit there, and I couldn't pee, and I'd turn on the water faucet to listen to the water, and that didn't work, and I'd massage my abdomen, and that didn't work, and I'd close my eyes, and I would visualize men peeing off of waterfalls, and that didn't work.
Yeah.
I would end up going back to massaging my abdomen, and eventually I could pee. I mean, it'd be like probably 8 minutes later I could pee. And what I now know is that as these organs are being displaced, it's crimping off the urethra, which is that tube where the pee goes from the bladder to the outside of the body. It's like a hose. It's crimped off. It can't get through.
Wow, it's actually scary to think of that.
Yeah, just by massaging, I would be moving it around, and finally I could pee. So that happens in those. The incontinence is in there's four grades of severity, 1, 2, 3, and 4 with POP. In the lower grades, the milder grades of 1 and 2, you'll have incontinence. In the more advanced stages of 3 and 4, and I was a stage 3, you have the urine retention. Chronic constipation, huge flag. I'm not talking the once in the blue moon constipation. I'm talking like every day. When you have got chronic constipation and you've eaten fiber until you feel like a walking block of shredded wheat, and you've drunk all kinds of water and nothing's helping you, you exercise and nothing's helping you, that's a flag. You might have a rectal seal, which is when their rectum has a bulge in it. And so that's a big flag for women. There is also fecal incontinence. And that's one of the reasons that this is still in the closet, because we as Americans are so poop phobic. Oh my goodness. Let's not talk about poop. If it's a baby's diaper, we're good. You know, but otherwise, let's not go there.
That's for
adults. And that's unfortunate. That's so unfortunate. You know?
And we think of really old people having this happen, but we don't think of women in their 30s, 40s, or 50s.
Exactly. And that's because no one's talking about it. No one's revealing it, because it's got such a stigma attached to it.
Absolutely.
There's also issues with pain with intercourse, lack of sexual sensation, Women can have rectal, vaginal, back, or pelvic pain, any combination of those, rectal or vaginal pressure, and that is distinctly different from pain. With the pressure with POP, there is very definite pushing down pressure that you can feel. If you notice that your tampons are just, they just won't stay in anymore, that's a flag. So there's a lot of different symptoms, and they'll vary from woman to woman depending on what type or types of POP she has. And by just getting the word out there about these symptoms, it may help someone recognize that they need to dig a little bit deeper and find out what's going on.
All right, what I would like is for you to give your website again so people can get that information if they need it.
Okay, well, the first place I point people to, the easiest way to do this is to go to the book website, because there's a link on that to get to the nonprofit, and then you can see both sites to find what you need. My book website is sherrypalm.com, and that is sherrieplm.com. And there's a page on that that's called APOPS, and that will get you to my APOPS, Association for Pelvic Organ Prolapse, nonprofit site. And that site has got just a boatload of information on it as well. And both websites on the homepage have got a short YouTube that you can watch, which goes through some of the basic information. They both have got feeds to my Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn accounts. And every Monday through Friday, I send out a little POP whisper, just little hints and tips for women that have got POP issues going on. There's also a link on both homepages to medhelp.org, and that's the urogynecology forum that I'm the community leader of, and women can send in their questions anonymously if they got concerns about, you know, they're embarrassed for, you know, and I'm asking you, don't be embarrassed. Just send in any item. There is no question too graphic.
And if
you're
wonderful.
Uncomfortable doing that, send your questions in, and we'll address them and try and get some help for you.
All right, I have one more question. We're running out of time here.
Okay.
What about relationships? I mean, women are just not living alone with this issue. Many of them are married or living with someone and being sexual with a partner.
Yes.
What suggestions do you have?
Huge baggage here. I'm so glad you brought this up, Erica. Oftentimes in relationships, women with POP, because they have urinary or fecal leakage, start to pull back from having intimate they don't want to have sex anymore with their partner because they're so worried about the leakage issues. There are also women that pull away from sex because of the pain with intercourse factor. With the issues with the incontinence stuff, I encourage women to just disclose to your partner. As hard as it is, you're going to need to sit down and have, you know, just pour yourself a drink or a cup of coffee or whatever it is that you two together can sit and have a intimate conversation and just disclose what's happening, because men, it never occurs to them often. It doesn't make any sense, does it? Never occurs to them often. Men seldom recognize that there's a health issue going on. When women pull back from intimacy,
I counsel a lot of couples, and a lot of times the man will take it personally and he feels like, she's not giving to him anymore.
Exactly.
And he may be relieved to find out that maybe
there's
something they can do about it.
Exactly. Men just go to that page where they think she's just not that into me anymore, or she doesn't like sex anymore, and that's not the case. Women really crave the intimate bond that sexual relations establish between themselves and their partner. They need that. And these women that have got POP, they're in such high states of distress because they feel they're losing their men because they can't be intimate with them, and there's this physical reason behind it. So sit down, take your man by the hand, sit down and have that personal conversation. Let him know.
I would
what's
add,
going
or
on.
Your woman by the hand. There are some
gay
women
that
have the same issue.
Yes.
Anyway,
exactly.
We're running out
ways.
Of time, so Sherry, I really want to thank you so much for being on the call today. You have written such a powerful book that will certainly help many women and also their partners to understand this really troubling and consuming women's health problem.
I can't thank you enough for having me on. Any chance I get to spread the word is a good thing. It just keeps the grassroots movement moving forward and helping more women find out about this health condition. So I thank you for the app. I really do.
And next week we'll be talking about a more lighthearted topic, a practice that's starting to overtake the lives of baby boomers and seniors also. In fact, baby boomers have become the new online social gamers. So you can read more about that at my blog site, healthybabyboomersnetwork.com. So Sherry, thank you so much for taking the time to share with our listeners some important insights and information about pelvic organ prolapse, a female problem that many may have known nothing about before today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you giving me the stand and having a chance to say the things I got to say. So I do appreciate it, Erica. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Well,